I'm Kate Remington with Jonathan Yates. He's the music director and the conductor of the Norwalk Symphony Orchestra. And I'm really looking forward to talking with you about the concert that you've got planned for this Saturday evening, November 16th, at the Norwalk Concert Hall. It's always great to have a chance to talk.
Kate, I'm always delighted to have the chance to speak with you as well.
Well, you know, this is such an interesting program and a lot of moving parts because you've got two soloists, singer Rebecca Ringel-Camerai and pianist Andrew Armstrong. And then there's also members of the New England Academy of Dance, and the program features songs by Ives and Ravel, Wagner's Siegfried Idyll, and Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue. So I guess, you know, besides Ives and Gershwin being American, what is the thread that ties all of these pieces together?
You know, it's all about connectivity, actually. And some of it, you know, it, as is so often the case with these with programming, it comes from, you know, sort of special requests from people you're working with, and then you sort of explore the connections that happen once you get going. We had admittedly originally and why the concert is called American Connections, and more now I would say it's maybe more accurate just to call it Connections, because it's half American music and half European music. We were thinking of doing Appalachian Spring with the wonderful dancers at NEAD, and you know, I talked to the director and they said, you know, the Martha Graham choreography is so iconic for that piece that, you know, we'd like to do something that we can explore, something that's really our own. And so we went back and forth, and I went, well, what about Siegfried Idyll? Because it's also for a chamber orchestra, and it's just one of my favorite pieces in the world. And they said, oh, yeah, we'd love that. So they're doing a world premiere choreography. The choreography is brand new for this work. It's really exciting because we've collaborated quite a bit with NEAD, but mostly on sort of holiday music and children's kind of events. We've done the Nutcracker together. We've done Peter and the Wolf together, and this is the first time that we're working with the professional element of their dance company, and with this sort of really serious work, you know, the Wagner, Siegfried Idyll. And so when that came into place, I thought, well, what has sort of interesting connections with Wagner? And what always fascinated me is, you know, we often talk about how German music and French music have nothing in common, right? Because the French guys are doing, and for a good reason, like, they're doing their own thing. And because they don't want to be, you know, German music was so dominant for instrumental and orchestral music, you know, right up through the 19th century. And the French guys are like, no, we are doing the absolute opposite. You all did architecture, and we are, you know, and kind of depth, and we are going to do color and light. But there is one or a couple composers who sort of bridge that gap. And it's, you know, like Wagner and his acolytes like Liszt, who start really experimenting in orchestral colors. So I love pairing Wagner with French music, because you can actually hear the connection between, it's the one guy who can connect French and German music. And the thing about those Ravel songs is, you know, it's for a very small ensemble. It's for two flutes, two clarinets, string quartet, and piano. But, like, the amount of orchestral colors that he gets out of that little group, I mean, you know, there are very few composers who can create that kind of, again, like, that sort of luminous quality. And so that's kind of the connectivity of the first half, which is European, and then we go to America for the second half, and we do, you know, maybe the most famous American work ever composed, Rhapsody in Blue, with an amazing soloist, Andy Armstrong. And, you know, and I also, again, so we I knew I wanted to do that work, and I wanted to pair it with something that maybe isn't always done. And in this case, I thought, oh, my God, let's do some Ives, you know, who's a Connecticut composer and one of my favorites. And, you know, Gershwin and Ives are so great to hear side by side, because they're, in a way, flip sides of the similar coin. You know, they both take American vernacular music and take it into a classical idiom. But with Gershwin, you know, it's jazz. And he makes that idiom so tuneful and so beautiful and so rich, whereas Ives takes, you know, sort of more patriotic music, Americana, hymns, and in a way, you know, since that music is already kind of naturally tuneful, mm-hmm. he takes a sort of different tact, right? And he kind of sticks it off and through a meat grinder. And so what you get is this incredible, this combination of like very sentimental and very avant-garde kind of stuff going on at the same time. And so, you know, you put those four works together and like suddenly you have quite a smorgasbord of beautiful music, some of which, you know, is going to be super familiar to the audience, certainly the Gershwin, and some of which I can promise nobody will have ever heard, like a couple of the Ives songs. And and again, you toss in a couple of good soloists and, you know, and choreography. And I think it's a very exciting evening, I have to say.
I think what's so cool about it is, you know, a lot of times in concerts, there's a wide range, a span of time from, say, the classical era to a contemporary piece, a couple hundred years. And with this, you've narrowed it down to just a very narrow time frame, because Gershwin and Ives and Ravel were all contemporaries. Wagner is little bit older than that, but not by a lot. And it's so interesting to hear what that time period produced with all these different voices. That's just such a cool way of programming a concert.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, and you know, Ravel and Gershwin met, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with Ravel telling Gershwin that, you know, he should do exactly what he was doing already, that was exactly the way for Gershwin to go. It's just, you know, and that period of the early 20th century, it's one of my favorite times in music history, because people are just exploring in so many different ways, you know, and all the different nations and nationalities are kind of developing their own specific colors and their own specific approaches to music. And so suddenly classical music just like blossoms out, you know, in all these different directions. So you can get three composers on a concert like Ives, Gershwin, and Ravel, who are really doing very different things, but all like really kind of on the cutting edge in a variety of ways. And like, I agree, Kate. I love having guys like that together on the same program.
Yeah, and it's so interesting to have the perspective of the amount of time that has passed, because Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue, you know, it's so familiar now. You know, United Airlines uses it as its theme. But at the time, it was really avant-garde, and it still seems as though people still haven't kind of come to grips with what Ives was trying to do with a lot of his music. So in a way, he's still avant-garde, even, you know, like 100 years later. So,
oh, very much. I mean, and the thing, and so about the Gershwin, actually, you know, we're doing it in the original jazz band version.
Oh,
actually.
Cool.
You know, with all the saxophones, with just a very small string section. It's just 8 violins. And what I actually love about that version is that it keeps, you really hear the original energy of the work. Like, I love the version with the big orchestra that everybody knows from United Airlines. But the thing about it is it, all the edges are kind of rounded off a little bit when you stick it with a big, big orchestra. And the thing is that it is so fresh, the Gershwin. You know, it's just such a fresh, fresh piece. And I love the jazz band version, because I think it really maintains that freshness, you know?
Well, yeah, and it really sounds more like the product of its time. Like, when
exactly.
You listen to those old Bix Beiderbecke recordings, Paul Whiteman arranged some of his jazz band stuff, too. So there's like a real, you know, parallel with that kind of sound.
Absolutely. Like, it really, it that's exactly right. And that's what he was hearing, you know, and that's what he was influenced by. And it was for the Paul Whiteman band, you know, and the Ives, it's true, it still sounds so avant-garde. I mean, what I love about these three songs so is that, again, you have, what he can do is he can just turn on a dime from, you know, from kind of, from, you know, really dissonant, kind of spiky stuff to really sentimental stuff to really humorous stuff as well. So, you know, one of the songs is actually a cowboy song. And so it begins in this really kind of, you know, it's like right out of the musical Oklahoma. And then, you know, it ends up, it's actually a story about a cowboy who's killed by his horse falls on him.
Oh, no.
And you can literally, you hear the horse falling on him in the middle of the song, and the pianist just starts hitting the piano all the way down. It is one of the funniest things I have ever heard in a work of music. I mean, it's just, and then at the same time, though, we're also doing Mists, which is just like, you know, I was just working on it. He's like, oh my, with a pianist, he's like, oh, it's like Early Berg. I was like, yeah, it's just, it's so lovely. And so, yeah, when ever given the chance to do Ives in Connecticut, you know, our local guy, I always go right to it, I have to admit.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about the singer who's going to be doing the songs, mezzo-soprano Rebecca Ringel-Kamerai. She's just got the most wonderful voice. And I think the audience on Saturday night is going to be so lucky to have a chance to hear her.
Yeah, I do too. And we just rehearsed together right before this interview. And I worked with her, I want to say, oh God, maybe 5-6 years ago, and, you know, fell in love with her voice. And her voice is, oh my God, it's even richer now. I mean, it's just a luxurious, luxurious instrument. And she brings so much of herself to the works as well. And, yeah, I mean, she's just a gorgeous, gorgeous singer. And, Andy, our soloist in the Gershwin, is probably pretty well known, I think, to audiences in Connecticut, because he is originally from here. And what a phenomenal musician he is as well. I think the audience is definitely in for a treat with all of our guest artists, and, you know, to the chance to see new choreography as well for the first time. I mean, and the one work of, you know, Siegfried Adil, like, if people get, sometimes people get a little nervous about Wagner because, you know, they think of these 6-hour long operas. It is the one, the sweetest, most intimate piece of Wagner, right? Written for his wife's birthday. And she woke up and was serenaded by it from the courtyard, these, you know, 15 or 20 musicians playing Siegfried Adil. It is just the most romantic, most loving. It's just like one big sunrise. And to see that with dancers, I think it's going to be quite special, I have to say.
That's understatement of the year, I think. Well, Jonathan, it is always so much fun to talk with you about this, and I know it's going to be a wonderful concert. So thank you so much for taking some time to tell us about it.
Absolutely, Kate, and as always, thank you for having me. I love chatting with you.